back in on Canuck Central. Friday edition of Sat and Bick on Sportsnet 650. And this hour of Canuck Central is brought to you by BC Liquor. Until May 31st, explore their exceptional selection and save like $7 on 36 packs of Old Style Pilsner. Visit your nearest BC Liquor today. Enjoy responsibly. Producers today, we have Eddie, we have Ben, we have Kiernan, we have three people, all hands on deck to produce this show.
It's playoffs, man.
It's playoffs.
Not here locally, but it's playoffs.
Need this many people to keep the ship above water.
Yeah, Reach is in here, Josh is in here, so we
need
extra
support.
It's
really more of a, like, you guys are more search and rescue. We're already sunk. You guys are just here to clean up the mess.
Well, we just let you sink on your own.
Yeah.
We'll maybe toss you a rescue boat or a life jacket.
They'll throw one life jacket, and like, you guys figure out a way to survive with one life jacket.
Yeah.
It's all about the entertainment.
Yeah, that's usually what it is.
We got a text during Yannick's hit. Was like, what was that about sink?
Just leave that. Yeah, a lot of reaction on text inbox. Leafs fan texting in. Stop whining about the Leafs. It's not about the Leafs. It's about a bad call. It's not about the Leafs. Why are Leafs fans so insecure sometimes? It's okay. Like, we're not talking about your team. It's okay.
Because it's been 58 years?
Good point.
That's why.
I think that's what it is.
Why are we so insecure here? Because it's been 55 years.
That's probably why. Good reason why. All right, let's just get to it. It's time for The Open.
Welcome to The Open.
Ah! That's your home. Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
It is The Open, where we break down the latest on the Vancouver Canucks and everything else happening in the world of hockey. And lots of action in the postseason, as we spoke to Yannick about. And we'll get to some of that here in the roundup and as the show goes on, especially some players on some playoff teams, either in the playoffs or out of the playoffs, who are bound to be UFAs, and how they've fared and how they may line up as targets potentially for the Vancouver Canucks. But it's another day that ends in Y, so that means the Canucks are looking for their head coach. And there is more information, or not really more information, just more discussions around the head coach. And today, Elliot Friedman on the 32 Thoughts podcast spoke about the Marco Sturm thing and spoke about how he is an option and how he is somebody who is enthusiastic about the job, really is excited to get a head coaching job, and how he's in the mix. And some of the things that I mentioned yesterday about Marco Sturm. But the question ultimately comes down to, Bick, are they going with a first-time head coach? And if they are they going outside the organization? And that's going to be the big question. I think whether he gets a second interview is going to be telling, just like everybody else. And like I said, next week is when the in-person interviews are. Now, it's not necessarily going to be all people coming to Vancouver. Mm-hmm. It could be the Canucks meeting somebody somewhere, you know, neutral or whatever as well. So we'll see what happens. But if Marco Sturm gets a second interview, I think that's going to tell us here who's actually serious and who isn't.
Yeah, and look, as some of the jobs start to fill up as well, Quenneville obviously gets hired yesterday. Mike Sullivan's already picked up a gig. These jobs are going to start filling up here. Pittsburgh, Seattle. I know Rick Tocchet's name gets mentioned with some of these teams here as well. You know, how long this search goes on for, to me, is... I know that you mentioned in-person interviews next week. They want to get this done here over the next couple of weeks, but if they're looking for someone without experience or who hasn't had NHL experience, and there's an internal candidate that doesn't have NHL experience, but someone you know, very familiar, and as the team has success, I'm talking about Manning and the Abbotsford Canucks, does that delay the process here? And like, that's the part to me is going to be interesting, because it's not as if the other coaching candidates are going to say, well, I'll just wait till you're done talking to Manny. They are pursuing jobs as well.
Yeah.
And if they get an inclination, it's like, well, you're really holding out for Manny? Am I really your first choice? Do they withdraw? It's just a fascinating time because, yeah, like, they do need to solve this here in the next, you would assume, 10 to 14 days.
Yeah, I'm not sure that the top of their list has totally crystallized yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of that is the, you know, Manny coaching Abbotsford and letting him have the space here to do that. And, and you know, I know they said they want to talk after, but let's say Abby wins tonight. Does that give you a chance? Okay, before the next series starts, let's have a discussion here. Just, you know, whatever, right? Or maybe you continue discussions that have already kind of happened. But I'm not sure the very top of that list has crystallized. And I've been asking around a lot when it comes to, because we've heard a lot about Vellucci, his name's come up, right? Sturm's come up. And even Adam Foote, guys who are inexperienced as NHL head coaches. But I'm not sure that we know who the experienced candidates are yet, or if they truly exist. I do know, though, that there aren't many on the experienced list that are intriguing. Like, I think there's maybe a couple of guys they may speak to that are experienced, but I don't think they're overly enthused by the options from the experienced guys that are waiting. Like, I don't see Jay Woodcroft as being an option, mm-hmm. for instance. As much as Laviolette was discussed, I don't quite see him really being an option either, right? So then you get to guys like Lalonde, and you get to guys who've, you know, had one stints before, like Ducharme, for instance.
You
guys
can't
like
do torts.
Definitely not, yeah. right? Not that he would come here anyways, but like, yes.
Of the experienced guys, it's like, we've gone through the list. You can throw David Quinn's name yeah. in there. It's like, okay, whatever.
And I'm not sure, honestly, I'm not sure, like, where Lalonde's the one I wonder about a little bit. Mm-hmm. And not because I have any reason to tie him to the Canucks, but I haven't heard an outright, yeah, you know, I wouldn't say, but I haven't heard anything about them being interested in him. So the thing that it ultimately comes down to is, do you go with who makes you feel the best? And maybe that is your internal candidate ultimately, right? But again, like, that person has a say in it too. But one thing that, you know, that I was told today too was, and we've mentioned this in the past, that these situations where you're doing a coaching search is also an opportunity for you to talk to other teams and talk to other players or people from different organizations.
And it's a thing that they didn't do last time, which is what made it so maddening on top of the leaving Bruce flapping in the wind scenario. It's they had their guy. Mm-hmm. They wanted to get Rick Tocchet in. They were just kind of waiting, waiting, and they just kind of let Bruce.
Now, he was hanging in the wind until they figured it out with
but they
Rick.
Didn't go through the full process of, like, really understanding, like, who, like.
It was in season. Then you can't do a full process in season.
But really any sort of, like,
you're right.
They were basically earmarked on their guy. They were waiting for the moment to do it, and they did it. And even that took some time, but hey, like, is there 3 weeks there, a month that you could have taken? And I do wonder, as much as we're talking about here, you want to do this in the next 10 to 14 days because you've had 3 weeks or 2 weeks into this now. Is there a deadline to fully grasp the entire depth of what the entire coaching cycle looks like?
Yeah, and I don't think so. I think a lot of time has been spent this week on the phone interviews, and those ones you could do a lot of. I mean, you can probably do 2 dozen interviews over the course of a week, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, if you want to spend a lot of time on the phone, for instance,
phones,
you know,
and Zooms,
you can do a lot of those over the course of 5 or 6 days. But whether that materializes to a legitimate short list, that's going to be the question. So you may have spoken to, let's say, a dozen guys. Just our hypothetical number here. That's going to be whittled down to probably like 4.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be, you know, the telling part that's going to come from next week about it. But I do think the opportunity to talk to people and get ideas, because this isn't like, hey, I just call you, Bick, and hey, let's just, you know, chit chat about this roster. When you set up an interview with a coaching candidate, that candidate, if they're a good candidate, calls you with like a PowerPoint that they've done, and they have, you know, they've kind of done research. Mm-hmm. They have like an essay they've done for you, right? Like, they broke it down and they're like, hey, here's
it's a job interview.
Yeah. And you come in prepared, like a real, really prepared, and they can present really good, interesting ideas. And I think that is something that they're taking advantage of. And does that mean that they're going to hire all these guys? No, but can you learn some things? And, mm-hmm. you know, getting somebody to give you a fresh set of eyes on your organization and on your players isn't necessarily a bad thing. So I think we have to be careful with hearing links, especially to these very enthusiastic first-time guys, and whether that is going to mean they're going to get hired or that they're favorites. I think a lot of this comes down to, hey, you're doing your due diligence. You're using the opportunity. And I wouldn't get too carried away. Like, I'm not convinced, like, we're going to see Sturm and Volucci be the next coach. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just not quite sure they're going to be the guys.
It's free labor on Fresh Perspectives.
Yeah.
Right? Just, what do other people think?
Yeah, exactly.
And sometimes, like, you can get too close to the forest and, like, well, this is the way it is. This is the way we've always done it. And you have someone else through this interview process say, well, this is what I'd like to do. It's like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Never thought about that.
Yeah.
And now do you apply that to the next candidate and say, hey, is this something? There's benefits in going through this process. As much as, look, it's a bad look, and Tocchet leaving, it leaves him in a spot. How do you make the best of the scenario now?
Yeah.
And this is part of that process.
You do need to make sure you get the right guy more than anything. Because as much as we talk about, you know, getting the right guy for Quinn, it doesn't matter whether Quinn likes to hire at first or not. What matters is you got the right guy for the job, and he proves to be right for the job.
And ultimately, look, they have to get this next, the coach, but a coach is only going to be able to do so much if you don't get the roster better.
Yeah, it comes down to the roster more than anything.
Yeah, this is the next step in the offseason. But the most important part of the offseason is done after that. You got to get some players in here.
Mm-hmm.
You got to get some guys that can play to the standard and get you to the playoffs and then have success in the playoffs.
Well, on that topic, because we can sit here and talk about coaches all we want, but do the Canucks change at all? Now that Tocchet's not their head coach, I don't think we're going to see them target different players than what they've targeted, but is it a fair question to wonder, Bic, if they're going to at least adjust the players they go after with a different head coach?
Okay, what's the model that we think they're chasing right now? Whether it's, assuming Rick Tocchet was still here.
Right.
There's still like a recreation of what Pittsburgh looked like, right? Is that a fair thing to say?
Yeah, philosophically, I don't think it's going to change dramatically.
Yeah,
right?
Because so I still look at...
They want forecheckers that can score a little bit, that can be reliable. They want some size. They want some speed, right?
And
they
Speed's the thing.
They want a center that can be good defensively.
Yeah, I don't know if that is, you know, singular to just Rick Tocchet.
Yeah.
They need those things. No matter how you break it down and the way you look at this roster right now, they need another defensive center.
Well, at least somebody who can take the important draws. And that's what was interesting about Josh Norris, because Norris has a long list of issues. You can, you know, the injuries and all that. But when you start breaking down his usage and his face-offs,
a lot of D-zone draws and success in it. Not just winning the draw,
yeah,
but suppressing and having a certain level of competency of playing toughs and having success in it.
And I think when you know that was a target they were at least somewhat aggressive in chasing down, I think it gives you a pretty good idea of the prototype they're looking for. Somebody who can take some face-offs. Doesn't have to be the best defensive player, but can you at least hand-hold your own and take some of those minutes? And so I don't think that changes. And I don't really think it changes really what they look for with their wingers. I don't think it changes too much at all in that regard. Like, I don't think having a different coach than Tocchet is going to appreciably change. The only thing I can see is maybe there's a guy, a project player, that they can look at and say, hey, maybe he has ties to this guy somewhere and said, hey, this might be interesting because he could work with him.
But that's more based on familiarity. Because also, yeah. I wouldn't want a coach that says, look, I'm coming in to this new environment. I'm inflexible. Only find me these type of players.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way.
Look, they got to go find talent, and you got to make it work with that talent.
Well, so it comes down to who do you go and chase after. Now, the UFA list, as we've discussed, is pretty thin this year. But there's still some guys to look at. Now, there are some players who have been performing in the playoffs. Some guys that were traded for to perform in a big way. The biggest one being Brock Nelson, where the Avalanche gave up a first-round pick of Callum Ritchie to acquire the impending free agent, who had 4 points in 7 games. But they were done in the first round. And then if you go through the other names, Bic, who else stands out to you as far as playoff performance who could be of interest to the Canucks who are free agents?
So the Jets are playing later tonight. And I know we always bring up his name. And the reason I was thinking about this, too, is, again, he's only had a couple of games, obviously, in the playoffs here. But it's 1 point in 3 games for Nick Ehlers. His gap in his resume coming up for the free agency is, hey, do you perform in the playoffs? And if this continues and he's kind of scoring at basically a third of his normal production rate, is that payday going to be there for him? And if the fear was, well, look, you can't get Nick Ehlers because he's going to be so expensive in free agency. And I know I'm sitting here saying he's not playing well in the playoffs, but this team just needs more talent. I'm starting to become really skeptical if he's really going to get a big payday in free agency. And does it make a lot of sense for them to now target in this environment, knowing that, hey, Brock is... I still think Brock's going to get a huge payday. It feels more likely Ehlers is going to come in under that.
Well, if you look at the projections, you've done the numbers on this too, like projection-wise, and we even saw the cap numbers by ATP,
AFP. Yep.
AFP projections. ATP is not tennis. But AFP projections, and they had Besser getting significantly more than Ehlers as well, right? And it's because if you look at, you know, the comparables of numbers, they're far more favorable for Besser. But in terms of when you watch them both play hockey, the numbers say one thing. When you watch the game, they may tell you something else. And that's not to take anything away from Brock, but we know that Brock, and this was interesting, we saw some Jay Fresh on, like, posted some of these numbers, some micro stats about how players impact games in different ways, zone entries, shot chances, rebounds, all these sort of little things that you can do to impact the game. And the guy who, like, led the league was Kiefer Sherwood, like, the most active player. But then you look at a guy like Brock Besser, he's kind of on the lower end, but the one thing he does really well is score goals. And the one thing he does well is be in the right spot and defensively does some good things, right? But he's not a player who's impacting numerous areas of the game consistently. Ehlers does more of that, but his issue is he doesn't play well with anybody. But he can drive a line on his own. The thing, though, is if he's not performing well in the playoffs...
No, I totally appreciate that.
Like, why would you want to go after another player who may have trouble in the postseason?
He's also a guy who drives his own line and helps get you to the playoffs, right? It's one of those things. It's like, yeah, look, I'd rather have Brock Besser than Nick Ehlers in the playoffs, 100%.
But who would you rather have get you to the playoffs?
Who's more likely to get you to the playoffs?
But and here's the, again, what matters more for this team, getting to the playoffs or doing well in the playoffs?
Yeah, but they don't.
But you can't do well in the playoffs until you get there either, right?
I think I'd rather solve the problem. It's like they don't have enough guys to help get you there.
Right.
I think I'd rather just do that substitution and figure out how to find guys to play well in the playoffs than say, oh, look, we know Brock's great in the playoffs. We just have to figure out how to get there now.
Well, that's the thing that's going to be really interesting is Ehlers actually going to be in a soft market? And is he willing to come to another Canadian market? And can you get him at that number? And that's going to be the question for any player ultimately, mm-hmm. Where you want to go and what you want to do. But do you think you're getting a more favorable deal with Ehlers or Besser if he comes back? Okay, so do you think Ehlers...
I can't wait till July 1 to see what these contracts look like.
Do you think Ehlers is getting $48 million in free agency? That's 8 times 6.
Yeah, I'll say yeah.
Well, I think...
I could see a 7x7 reality for Ehlers.
Okay, that's 49.
Yeah.
More or less the same thing, right? I think Besser is similar.
I think he's going to break 50.
So, okay, who would you rather have at 49? Besser or Ehlers?
Ehlers.
Yeah, I might go Besser, but it's tight. But I think that's a number.
In this market, Besser doesn't break 50, but I think on the open market, he breaks 50.
I think that's fair. Yeah. But I think looking at that number, because my biggest thing with Ehlers, and I love the speed, but you need guys that can play with other players.
Yeah, but then we're talking about someone who needs other players to get him going.
Yeah. No, it's true. But, right? at least you put him with somebody else, you know it's going to work.
It's not even a catch-22. It's which 11 do you want?
Well, and this kind of just kind of comes back to how challenging this offseason is for this team, right?
Yeah.
And how the solutions, this illuminates more than anything else that how the solutions are imperfect, mm-hmm. and that you're choosing between imperfect solutions. If you're trying to sign one of these two players, it's honestly, they're very similar value-wise. It comes down to which attributes you weigh more than
100%.
The other, right?
And then you go through the exercise. Okay, what other UFAs? Look, Marner's having a fantastic playoffs, full credit to him.
It's just not happening, but yes.
But now he's going to get a huge payday outside of already being the most attractive free agent by a mile.
But if you see the way the way Rantanen's impacting, and I'm not saying Marner is Rantanen. Like, I take Rantanen over Marner 10 times out of 10. But you're seeing a winger actually impact the game to that extent. Should you be afraid of throwing a massive offer at him, at least to make him listen to you?
Mm-hmm. No. But then,
I doubt he listens anyways.
No,
but.
Sure. But then you go through it, it's Giroux had a decent Faxa plan. Kuzmenko, again, these are the unrestricted free agents. We're not even going to talk about Brad Marchand. Sam Bennett, we keep talking. I'd love to see Sam Bennett here. You go through these names.
Yeah.
As far as the guys who are playing well and producing, it's not a huge list in the UFA pool.
No, there isn't, right? I mean, all these guys... You know, Faxa, so what's interesting about a guy like Faxa is if you can't find your ideal center, but you can find a winger who's really good, let's say you trade for Lafreniere, for instance, and he ends up being best at the wing, which he's played, and he doesn't end up being a center for you, could you sign a guy like Faxa?
Well, he would fit the thing that we're talking about of having a stopper as a center.
So at least now you have a guy you can throw all the toughs to, or like defensive zone faceoffs and situations to, and at least he can take some of that pressure off a little bit. But I think that's that's probably like a plan D, I think, for them. Like if they're going to a Faxa type and going like Pedersen, Hedl, Bluger, and Faxa, like that's like your, or Roth, you know what I mean? That's like you've already exhausted
you're doing
all
that,
your options.
From Max Suter.
Well, the thing with Suter is ultimately has he priced himself out of their range? That seems to be the fear here, right? Like, would you pay him 5
yeah.
or 4.5?
text 650-650, faxes this year's Heinen. Yeah, certainly.
Yeah.
Right? Like, certainly.
Yeah, for sure, right? And if you look at Faxa, because I always liked Faxa, what he does, but if you're asking him to be more than a 12, 13-minute guy, he's never been more than that.
Tough scenario.
You know, like, he's never been more than that.
It's really tough.
Yeah.
Rosie, doing well in the playoffs is more important. What's the point of getting there and doing nothing? And Besser can definitely help. So definitely Besser. Yeah, again, I'll admit, like, Besser's better in the playoffs. But we're also sitting here saying, like, you signed Besser at the price you bring him back at. You still need to go get a center.
Yeah.
Like, he's not playing. He performed way worse this season without JT. And Nick Ehlers kept doing what Nick Ehlers does. And they're in the playoffs. Yeah. That's the struggle.
No, it is. It's such a difficult position to be in. Chris and Duncan says, do you think Marco Rossi is too slow for the Canucks to think about acquiring? I don't think he's too slow. I think he's too small.
This is your thing.
Well, I mean, I know they've drafted some small players.
Yeah.
They don't typically trade for and sign small players.
I like Marco Rossi. He's not slow. He's like perfectly league average speed. Again, not fast, but totally league average. He can score goals. It's just the profile of what they need is more defensively strong, and he's got some ways to go in that. He's on the list of guys that, you know, could be in the distressed asset market, but I don't know if it means if you acquire him, job's done all of a sudden of like, oh, wow, we got Marco Rossi, and now our center depth is way better.
Mm-hmm.
Still some work to do then.
Yeah. No, there is a lot of work that still has to get done. And, you know, this offseason is going to be fascinating because there aren't great solutions. There are imperfect solutions. This text says, are you sitting down? Zibanejad. I mean, I don't think the Canucks are going to do that. I think when I asked about Zibanejad when all that stuff was going on, what I was told then, and hey, things can change over the course of 6-7 months, I suppose, but there was no appetite in taking on that contract. And not that he would have an appetite to come here anyways. He has a say with his no trade clause. But I just don't get the sense that they're going to be... If there's a guy who's a veteran that they trade for with term, it would have to be a Forsberg type, Philip Forsberg type. That I could see. And I'm not reporting anything.
Sure.
I'm just saying, you know, I'm saying like if you're talking about a guy who's a little bit older... That's like, say, you know, like that I could maybe...
One-shot scorer, you know, plays fast.
Yeah, can play center, more of a wing, but can do a bit of different things for a really big player, right-handed shot and all that, right? So I think that I can maybe see, but I don't see Zibanejad.
Yeah, it feels like you had your opportunity to do that. And
yeah, or at least explore it, right? All right, keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox. We'll get to more of your questions during the mailbag. That's coming up next segment. Quickly running through the roundup. Abbotsford Canucks Game 4 against Coachella Valley, 7 p.m. tonight. That game is on Sportsnet 650. You can listen to it. If they win, they clinch and move on. Oilers are up 2-0 on the Golden Knights. Caps and Canes are tied at 1. Leafs and Panthers get going here. Jets and Stars. Just quickly on Panthers, Leafs, do you think I don't think the Panthers are in trouble until, again, the cliche, they lose at home in Florida here. But like, if the Leafs want to win this series, I think they have to win one of these two games. I just don't see a path.
If the Leafs go back home
and it's 2-2, I don't see it. I don't see it.
Just the levels of unease in game 5 in that building.
Yeah.
It might topple them over.
Yeah. They have to win one game to make it happen.
Honestly, like, such an easy thing to say, Vic. Yeah. Tonight's kind of the series.
Yeah. More or less in some ways. Right. Jets, Stars.
Ben's laughing at me. It's like, you get paid to do this?
What? Game 3? It's the series.
We had this argument last year. We're doing it all over again. I'm a big believer in the odd numbers are the most important games.
This is the point that Shaq made about the Knicks. He said, the Knicks have to win Game 3. They lose Game 3,
I think
they're not winning the series.
100%.
And it's totally like, how do you say that, being up 2-0 going home?
I totally agree.
There is no must win until it's actually a must win.
That's terrible.
No, that's actually, you know, because he's educated, he's correct.
What it means.
No. That's what it means, yes.
We'll do this on the other side. We've got to go to break.
All right. The mailbag, that's coming up next. And guests on Sportsnet 650 call in on the hotline, powered by West Industries. Don't get caught in the dark when it matters most. Visit them at powerwest.ca today. Keep the lights on. Sportsnet 650.